Call a meeting to order. I suppose it would be appropriate if I just read off names and have people answer here or not answer at all. Alderman Cox.
Here.
Alderman Frieders. Bart Olson.
Yes.
Dan Tressier. Chris Funkhauser.
I am here.
You're here? Okay, who am I forgetting now?
Jackie.
Okay.
It's me.
Oh, okay.
Yep, Molshewski.
I missed you. Okay. Did I get everybody else?
That's okay.
All right. Minutes of the meeting of March 5th. I'm sorry, yes. Comments?
No, sir.
Looks good.
Hearing none, we'll move on to the next item. PS 2020-11, monthly report review for February and March 2020.
All right, so the monthly report, you have February and March in front of you. February, I'm going to go over that very quickly. Overtime hours worked under the personnel information page. A large majority, 61 of the 98.5 hours of overtime was HIDTA, CPAT. They were doing deals, and that's funding through HIDTA that we get reimbursed for. You'll see under the community policing initiative several different photos of different things. Obviously, lost dogs and animal adoptions. Kendall County Health Department, local public health assessment. We had a recruitment event or a career fair at the middle school that we were at. And we had a couple different, actually one birthday, and then BK Fire did a tour and demonstration for the schools in their station one. We'll talk about the upcoming events here in a little bit, the Polar Plunge and the Respect for Law Banquet. And then the Battle of the Badge Blood Drive, which, by the way, the PD did win. The police department, not the fire department. Our training hours, we had 307 training hours in the month of February. As far as crashes go, we had a total of 54 crashes in February. 59.3, or just under 60%, were intersection related, and 126 in bridge again seemed to top the intersection related crashes. The dates and times, you know, if going back over the last couple monthly reports, the days of the week are kind of changing. Sometimes it seems like it's Monday. But the time was consistent the last couple months with between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m. 24 of the 54 crashes occurred between that time frame. So we'll obviously look to have our guys out there when we start doing more traffic enforcement in those areas around out and about at that time to make sure we can try to reduce the crashes. That's one of our main goals for our department this year. The detective squad, we had a couple larger cases. We had a 21-year-old by the name of Jacob Jensen, no relation, I might add, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He was charged for a crime that occurred between 2012 and 2015. Aggravated criminal sexual assault, criminal sexual abuse, and criminal sexual abuse. So it was a good investigation done by our detectives. One of our detectives down at the bottom, the last sentence, we'll have Detective Nelson was nominated for Detective of the Year for his casework throughout the course of 2019. He's just been a rock star with his cases. Actually, Dennis has too, and so has Pat, but Detective Nelson has just really done an outstanding job. As far as crime goes, under offense summary, part one crimes, it looks like we're down a few crimes from February of 19 as compared to February of 20, which is a good thing. But then we're up in part two crimes in February of 20 as compared to 19. The increase has to do with DUIs, which is actually a good thing that we're catching them. But then the secondary increase was fraud cases, which are your deceptive practices, forgeries, identity thefts, things like that. Our crisis intervention calls in February were pretty low, which is good. As far as our total calls for service, they went up. We were, as compared to 2019, we were up over 200 calls for service. So incident numbers, which is a pretty big jump. If I jump to March, you'll see the first paragraph right after the organizational chart. There's information there on COVID-19 and a lot of what we've tried to do as a department to make sure we're maintaining the safety of our staff as well as the safety of everybody in this building because we all interact. So you can read through that, and I know Seaver was going to talk a little later on. He had some questions on what we're doing as a department, and I can cover some of that stuff later, some of our special orders that we put out. Probably the biggest thing during the month of March that we've really tried to hit on is the community policing initiatives. We have autism awareness. If you look there, you see a picture of the pin that Bear had on his uniform. We wore that for the month of April. But we also got out into the community, and while we can't specifically go and visit with our autistic families, we did drop off gifts. That's going to be more in the April monthly report, but we put it in there because that's such an important month, at least to us. And then a lot of different, you know, our focus has been trying to support the businesses in town, trying to take photos and of where we're eating at, and really trying to make sure that you know, we're getting their names out there. So you have the blood drive, Battle of the Badge with BK. The picture on there was McMahon, Sergeant McMahon, who's never given blood before, and we shamed him, and he did it, which was kind of cool. And then you also have the life-saving award for Officer Borowski. Unfortunately, some sad news to report that the gentleman that he did save has passed away. He had some heart issues. Officer Borowski and I went to the wake this last week and met with the family, and just a super nice family. So that's, you know, sad news, of course. And then the other biggest thing in there was the polar plunge. We had, if you can look at the picture there, we had a ton of our officers there. And no, I'm not jumping in the water. Bear tried, but it was a great event. We had a cookout afterward at the PD, and no, I'm not doing it next year either. So our training was 162 hours. You'll notice a sharp decline in our crashes, which is great. A large part of that, I think, is partly because nobody's out driving with the governor's executive orders. 100% of our crashes had to do with intersections. So, which was kind of an anomaly, but I don't think I've ever seen that. And the days are Saturday, Sunday, and the time frame is between 6 and 10 p.m., which is kind of interesting. When I get to the detective squad, we have had to redo a lot of our operations as far as investigations goes. Obviously, to make sure that, you know, our staff is safe, make sure the public is safe, and then also making sure that we're not bringing people into the PD that would get our staff as well as Village Hall staff or City Hall staff sick. So we've had to rethink how we do things. It gave us gave us a ton of time to go back on some cases. We made sure we reached out to every victim who had a report to let them know that their case is put on hold at this point, that we will follow up on the case, but due to COVID-19, we gave them an update of where they're at, and just to let them know we had not forgotten them. So they were up to speed when it came to that, and I have received zero complaints from anybody specific to that, which is very good. As far as crimes for March of 2020, our total reports were down for the reports that we're tracking. In March of 2019, we had 186. In March of 2020, we had 169. Part one crimes, we were up one. And part two crimes, we were up two. So very consistent with the tick of things. One of the other things I'd like to actually bring up real quick. Actually, let me go back a little bit. Our calls for service actually went down 110. Our calls for service incident numbers from March of 19 as compared to March of 20. In 19, we had 990. In 2020, we had 880. We are tracking, here's a copy for you, Seaver. We are tracking nine specific crimes when it comes to COVID-19 that we're trying to make sure that we think that could have some relation to COVID-19. Those crimes are domestic violence, business disputes, neighborhood disputes, thefts, burglary to motor vehicles, custody disputes, battery, DUI, and robbery. When we look at the month of March, we had 100 reported crimes. Of those nine, we had 100 reported of those nine crimes. During the month of April, we had 72, so it went down a little bit, which is very good to see. January, we had 72. So comparing January and April, you know, obviously we're right in the midst of everything going on with COVID, and our numbers, you know, it hadn't really jumped. In February, we had 54. So, you know, we jumped up a little bit from February, but March was high. To date, as of today, May 6th, we have 22. So we'll see where that takes us. And so we are tracking that every day. Talking about COVID cases, we have a total of 48 cases in the city of Yorkville. We have 31 recoveries. We have three deaths. Two of the three were at Hillside Healthcare. We just were notified of one today. We have 13 that are not recovered yet, and we had one that had moved. So she was on our numbers, but then she had moved to another jurisdiction. So on a brighter note, our parades, I'm sure you guys have heard it. If you live anywhere in this town, we have completed 111 parades to date with the fire department. Joel was one of those 111. We have 58 scheduled still for a total of 169 as of today. I usually get anywhere between one and five per day. So that number is probably going to be closer to 200. So, and we've received one complaint about it. The gentleman, you know, and I understand, it was during the middle of the day and he has a young child and the sirens woke his child up and he wasn't happy with that. So I understand that. So we've tried to put a few things in place in that area where we're not blasting the air horns and the sirens. We're hitting it just a little bit so, you know, we don't cause problems. So questions on that?
Questions? Comments? I just have one. I think these reports are great.
Good.
I really appreciate it.
Does the gentleman live by the train?
No. He lives, well, no, not close to the train. On Kennedy, just off of Kennedy Road. How about that?
Okay. Just curious.
I get it.
No comment. Thank you for the update.
You bet.
Nice report.
Moving right on. PS 2020-12, adjudication reports for February to April 2020.
So we have, I have reports and attached in the packet were February and March 2nd and March 9th. After the March 9th, we stopped doing the adjudication court. Just a real quick breakdown of the police department tickets. I can't speak for the other departments, but we had five vehicle parking tickets. All were found liable. We had some traffic violations, more registration type violations. We had four of those. We had six cannabis violations, and we had two disorderly conduct violations. Of those 17, all 17 were found liable. As far as out of the ordinary, it's pretty consistent. Obviously, we haven't had anything in March. We are looking to start up again. I believe the date is going to be May 11th.
Oh, okay.
That's where we're starting, and I know our staff has talked to Christy. And Bart, if you have anything you want to add there, Bart or Aaron, I know we're working on trying to make sure that the room is safe, making sure we have good social distancing and lining up how we're going to outline and keep people away from one another.
Yeah, we started to draft those guidelines as soon. Have not revisited it since then, but it's all the things that Jim just mentioned. Social distancing, you know, see if there's a way that you can do some of it via remote participation, etc. So that's something that Kathy and I have talked about. We just have not buckled down and created those guidelines yet.
That's it, unless somebody has questions.
Hearing none.
Okay.
We move on to the next one. PS 2020-13 purchasing report.
That's a carry report. Is carry on?
I didn't. I didn't hear her.
But it's just an update on police-related items that she's been working on, and I believe it's just disposal of a couple of vehicles in this report. And it is. We did ask her to do this for all the departments, so you guys will see this on the different committee agendas going forward. Just to give kind of everybody an idea of, you know, where the RFPs sit, where the RFQs are, where the bids are, and so that we're not losing track of those things. So this is an informational item.
All right.
Pretty much what's there is just self-explanatory.
It is. M4, M12.
Questions? Comments? None. PS 2020-14, Neighbors by Ring Doorbell Program.
And I'm going to turn this over to Bear for a presentation for you. Go ahead.
All right, so for this one, so we don't have feedback, I'm on mute. Do you want to mute yours?
I'm going to mute mine. Okay.
Alrighty, everybody. Can everybody hear me? Awesome. All right. One of the things I'm going to present tonight is Neighbors by Ring. This program has kind of been widely
Nobody
spread.
Can hear you about a bear. I think Bear, your microphone is off. At least I can't hear you.
What about now?
Jim, you might have to turn your microphone on and then have Bear speak through that one.
Okay.
Just do it that way.
Yes.
Done.
Yeah, we can hear.
I can hear you.
Perfect.
So I'll do that one, and then.
You should be able to speak through Jim's microphone from afar, and then yeah, share your screen on your computer. That's what you're doing.
Perfect. So the program that we're going to introduce today is Ring by Neighbors, and this is something that some of our area agencies have already been participating in. I spoke to a couple command staff members, one from Pendle County and then one from Oswego. And I've heard great reviews on it thus far, as far as it being user-friendly and everything else. So before I kind of get in the sales pitch of Ring, I want to share with you guys just a minute and a half video that they provide that kind of shows the relevance of why this program was started by Ring and how it can assist with our police department and the needs of our city. So. Yep, we got to do this. So, screen share. Just give me 1 second. Okay.
If it's not running.
Tell me if you guys see a video. Do you see a new screen or no?
No. No, we still see your inbox here.
All right. So Where would you need this drug then?
Just over your Outlook email box.
Oh, Outlook email.
And or if that's the link right there, I might be able to.
It is right there. It's going to be Dallas Community Works Together.
Officer. Dallas Communities. Neighbors put an end to local crime spree?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's see if this will work. Can everybody hear it?
We were sitting here on the couch when my neighbors notified.
Oh, he can watch on mine. I think mine's got the volume. Yes, that was the only video I had for that. So I just wanted to give you guys just a sneak peek on some of the stuff that Ring can do. Going over that, like I said, the local agencies I've spoken to, they've mentioned some great leads and tips that they've received from this. But some of the top questions that we end up getting is, first, cost. What would be the cost to the city? And the answer is absolutely nothing. It's a completely free service that we can present. On top of that, when we're investigating a crime, whether it's a theft of packages, whether it's a burglary to motor vehicle, whether it's a violent crime, whatever the case would be, as police officers, one of our main things is to do what we call a neighborhood canvas. And at that point, we go knocking on doors, or we'd be putting something out to residents. Did you see, hear anything such as that? And one of the things that Ring ends up doing is that if this app, called Ring Neighbors, is something that you could put on your cell phone or whatever smart device you might have. And at that point, you don't even need a Ring doorbell. You can join this community. And as a police department, we would be able to have control to the point where we would be able to put out alerts or some kind of community watch things. So I guess an example we could put, if up in Bristol Bay, we've got car break-ins going on, we could put a geofence where it would just say, hey, in the Bristol Bay area, be sure to lock your car doors. We're noticing burglary to motor vehicles. And then at that point, people can anonymously put in some kind of tip. Whether they've got a Ring camera, such as a doorbell or outside cameras, and I was also advised that Google Nest works as well, that if they've got those, they can share that video footage and send it to us via the app. Now, another question we end up getting is, what about privacy? Such as, can the police just tap into these cameras? Are they going to know who provided this information? The answer is no. This is all completely consensual, where what we would do is we put out some kind of alert on this application that says, hey, we're seeing burglary to motor vehicles, or hey, there was this shooting, or there was whatever that happened. Can you please check your cameras from this date and time frame, and this is what we're looking for. Can you provide and view that? And then that's on them to provide that information. Now, when we do receive that tip, it ends up coming in anonymously, meaning that, for an example, Bear Fitzmyer's got a doorbell camera, and he's got a video of a vehicle that the police are looking for. He could provide that footage, but it would show up as neighbor one, not Bear Fitzmyer. So it would then be on the person sharing it to provide their information to the police. We wouldn't just automatically get that. So the long or the short of it is that with these camera systems, it's basically a neighborhood watch with this application. One of the ways it could benefit us right now specifically, especially with COVID and sometimes limiting the contact, is putting this out there. And if people don't answer the door or say that they're working the night shift, and this happens at night and we have no contact, somebody can easily on their break at work pull up their cameras and provide that information as well. So it's real time, and it can only end up helping us solve crimes. So that's pretty much Ring Neighbors in a nutshell, if you guys have any questions.
I'm not hearing.
Yes, sir.
So the access by the police department isn't automatic, correct?
That's correct. Everything needs to be submitted from the sender through Ring.
That takes care of my initial concern, which was not that it could potentially be a violation of people's privacy, but if it was just automatic and you had immediate access to someone's Ring doorbell, I could see where that could be a slippery slope. So I'm glad that it's voluntary.
Yeah,
I think it sounds like a good idea. Let's give it a shot.
Yeah, it's all
end up discontinuing its use, correct?
I'm sorry, Joel, I didn't catch the last part of your question.
Using it in the future. It's not something where once we sign up, we're kind of stuck with it. We can actually opt out at a certain point, correct?
I believe there should be no problem opting out. I haven't heard of any agencies doing that yet, but there is a part of understanding, and I wouldn't see why we wouldn't be able to cancel that at all.
Cool. Thank you, sir.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
All of the videos and tips are recorded anonymously, so you don't know the identity of the individuals who are providing you what could be potential evidence. How is it, like, if you need to track this person down, right? Let's say you got an armed robbery that occurs out in front of my house. Mm-hmm. And my Ring app or my Ring doorbell captures it clear and concise. You can hear it. You can see it. I send it in anonymously. But you need me. You need me to lay the foundation, to provide authenticity that the video actually occurred in the front of my residence. Mm-hmm. How do you do that if I, sending it anonymously, don't want to participate?
At that point, we would be able to reach out to, say, neighbor one or whoever submitted it and said, hey, can we follow up with you, please, and gather more information? So it would be like taking a tip from Crime Stoppers, or then it would be, hey, we've got some follow-up questions. Until then, it's basically just intelligence. But it helps us get the ball rolling. If there's anything pertinent, we can put out right away. And it's one of those things where, you know, the person doesn't need to come forward. They could just submit whatever video, and then the burden is on us to authenticate it, whether we could do that or not.
Okay, but there is a way to track down the person who sent it. You can reach out to the resident, say, thank you very much. You don't understand how helpful your tip has become, but we really need to speak with you because you could be a potential witness in a prosecution. There's a way to do that.
Absolutely, and then it would be for them to be able to follow up with us and authenticate that, yes. But initial stages, it would just show. Yeah, initial stages, it would just show neighbor one or neighbor two, and then it would be for us to, for them to not want to be anonymous anymore.
Okay, as long as there's a method of communication, then that clears up any concerns I have.
Hey, Dan, do you want us to check back with Ring and just send back any response that they would say? We can do that.
I just want to make sure that, I mean, I like the idea of this, and I do think that these camera doorbells do result in a lot of crimes being solved. I just want to make sure that people know that when they send this in, there's the possibility that they may be needed for either future investigation or possible testimony in a criminal trial. Like, people need to know, you just don't send in this potential evidence and then you wash your hands and, you know, you did your duty as a concerned citizen. It's a little bit deeper than that. You know, you can't just be a witness to a crime, report it, provide evidence, and then, you know, the possibility of being brought to court down the road is not existent. I don't know. A lot of people are reluctant to report crimes because they don't want to have to go to court to testify. So I don't know if there's something that people need to be notified about. You know, hey, you sent us this information, that's great, but you really need to know that when you do this, it just by hitting send, it doesn't eliminate your obligation as a citizen in the follow-up and possible prosecution of a criminal offense.
Hey, Dan,
Does that make any sense? That's
in the terms of service within the app itself. It basically says that you're not absolvable from having to be involved in it. So I've been using the app for a while. I've actually turned off all notifications because it's quite annoying.
You get a lot of breath.
You can send the things. It's almost like an assumed involvement if you do send them.
Okay. I just want to make sure that if people do actually volunteer to participate in this, they know that they're participating all the way.
And they would still, Dan, have the ability.
If a crime occurred on a day that you don't have a recording backed up, it might exist if you don't have access to the description. So
right.
The only way this is actually beneficial, which right now everybody's on, is if somebody witnesses a crime, knows that it happened, and then goes back and looks at their history. But if it happened more than a few days back, and they won't have access to it. Like, I have to pay for my subscription. So I know that I can go back into perpetuity and share whatever I need to do. I think it's up for like 6 or 7 months. But just know that when you sign up for the app, it basically says all of those things in the fine print. You might want to double check that on the Neighbors app specifically. But with the Ring, it basically says, this is used to protect your home. Just because you have a camera doesn't mean you're not going to get stuff stolen. Also, if you catch something that does happen, you might be required to get involved legally.
Dan, I'm
making sure there's some type of clarification for that.
And one of the things that, I mean, victims or witnesses at all times, they can always choose not to participate. And just that just means we lose the video, and hopefully that's not the only piece of evidence that we have. We have that in cases all the time, and I know you see it in court all the time. Somebody witnesses a crime. We know we have witnesses, but they're refusing to testify. Our goal is to try to have them testify and protect them, and there's laws that protect them. But in this case here, we would never force anybody to do that if they refused or they gave it to us but then later refused. That's just something we would have to work out through the prosecution side of things. Great
right.
Question.
9 times out of 10, you're going to have more evidence than just an individual eyewitness.
Yes. That's what we hope.
Thank you.
Great questions. Thank you.
Do you have any idea the percentage of people that have got, you know, are installing these things? It seems like every place I go lately, someone's house, they've got one.
Yeah.
And I'm really surprised that
every neighborhood's got it. Every neighborhood's got it. I've got one on my house.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a great tool.
I have, to answer your question, Seaver, I don't know a percentage of, you know, how many people have it. But you're right. It
just seems like it's more than one, you know, one per subdivision. I mean.
Well, and one of the main things that we do, and Bear said it earlier, was canvassing. When we had our shooting this week, one of the first things we do is we go out and start looking for cameras, whether it's at businesses, if it happened in a residential area. Those are things we would look for to see if we can get that. So it's definitely a great tool. And the great part is they don't want to share it. They don't have to. And we have no access to it unless they decide to present it. So.
Okay. On to the next one, 2020-15, e-citation implementation.
All right, I'm going to turn this over to Ray Michalasek. And just keep in mind that this is one of the budgetary items that Bart has presented, where if we, you know, obviously with COVID-19 and the budgetary status of things, you know, this would be on the cut list. So today, there's no action today. It's more informational only.
Gotcha.
All right. Can everyone hear me? Yes? Okay. I'll be presenting e-citation to all of you tonight, so thank you for hearing my presentation here. Basically, e-citation is our effort to come in line with the city's priority goal of automation and technology improvements. As you know, most younger people grew up using all electronic platforms, and you know, we've had quite an influx of younger officers, so it's something they're very excited about too, is to get away from paper. Basically, e-citation is called Brazos. It's through Tyler New World, which is the company we've had our records management system through for about 10 years now. We also just recently, in December of 2018, implemented Tyler New World CAD through KenCom Dispatch. So now we're integrated. We're able to integrate with the CAD system and our record management system. So what this would allow us to do is to complete all our traffic citations, written warnings, ordinance citations. We've also priced it out for tow and impound reports. All those things would be done electronically. The benefit of that is that our officers, one, they'll have drop-down boxes with all the offenses, penalties, fines, court dates, you name it, is all already preloaded into the system based on that officer's individual identifiers when they sign in. So they'll have that officer's court dates when they sign in, as well as a signature, which will eliminate, I don't know if any of you ever seen a ticket, some of the signatures are pretty horrendous. So you actually be able to read the officer's name on a ticket, which would be quite a surprise. Also, all the information is also populated from the CAD system. So once they've run this person through the CAD system, they can just move that information over, so to say, to the ticket. The ticket will actually be completed in a quicker manner, and then they will be able to print the ticket at a printer inside the car. The printers operate both with either Bluetooth or a hardwire. Once they return to the PD and everything is downloaded into the system, everything goes manually into our records management system. The advantage of that is now a clerk doesn't have to manually enter each ticket. You can see on page 2 of the handout for e-citation where I did a time savings illustration where I calculated all the citations, written warnings, and ordinance citations that we completed the last 2 years, plus a projection for this year. You can see we estimated, based on my conversations with both records clerks and officers, approximately a 5-minute savings per document, because for records clerks, there is no entry whatsoever anymore. The information goes right into records management. And then 2 minutes per officer is what the officers estimated would save them, not have to write out each individual ticket. And where there's really a time savings for them is multiple tickets. If they're on scene with multiple tickets, they just click a box and it starts a new ticket with all the information already in there, and they can just change the offense. Let's say you had an accident with a suspended license and an insurance violation, let's say. So that's where some extra time savings might come in, but we estimated about 2 minutes per document. So what I did, if you see in that table, is I took the total documents, I multiplied them by the minutes per document, divided by 60 to come up with an approximate hours saved annually. And you can see, you know, anywhere between 530 hours and 684 hours. So these are just estimates, obviously, based on these guesses of how much it took from polling the records clerks and the officer how long it would take to fill out these documents. So you can see there's quite a bit of time savings. That also does not include the time savings to create the docket that has to go to the circuit clerk's office, because what e-ticket will allow us to do is automatically transmit the information to the circuit clerk's office, because it will be interfaced with the Kendall County circuit clerk. Therefore, there's no more paper documents that need to be carried over there in the form of the tickets. Also, we don't have to have an officer drive those over or sign them in. The records clerk won't have to create a docket each morning listing all the tickets out that are typed in of what needs to go over to the circuit clerk. So there's some time savings there also that's not included in this. But these were probably the only time savings I was comfortable estimating. I think there's probably some additional ones that exist. I just don't know how to put those into paper. It's probably something we'd more figure out along the line, but that's my best guess. So pretty educated guess, I think, based on how much time this stuff takes. So the nuts and bolts of the program, the way it's laid out, is the Kendall County Sheriff's Office has already implemented it. They're in the process of getting all the code written through both Tyler New World and the Kendall County Circuit Clerk, where they have to interface with the Circuit Clerk software, which is Janos. It's called Janos system is how they do all their records management for the Circuit Clerk. Oswego PD is also in the middle of implementing their purchase, and then Plano Police Department is also looking into it along with us. So what we have done is worked with, as the other agencies have in the county, worked with the Kendall County Circuit Clerk to on an agreement to have them pay for a portion of it. Obviously, it benefits them to go to a all-electronic system as much as it does us. It saves them from having to enter a lot of records manually. So you can see in the document that they're paying for a portion. And there's an intergovernmental agreement, Exhibit A, that has been created where that is discussed. And I've had conversation with the circuit clerk, Robin Ingmanson, that this would be paid for through on their end through fees they collect on court services related to traffic tickets. They already have a separate fee in there for upgrading to electronic citations. So their portion, you can see the total is not to exceed $59,200. Their portion is $30,900, so they're actually paying a little more significant portion. Not greatly significant, but I apologize for the typo. There is two totals on there. It's actually $3,900, not $3,300, if you see on the second amount. The other intergovernmental agreement is with KenCom. The reason we need this is KenCom is the client for Tyler New World. So all purchasing of New World products, or any Tyler products for that matter, which this product is called Brazos, would have to go through KenCom, as they are the client. So all the billing is done through KenCom, and then they bill out to the agency that purchased the services. So as I explained, in this case, we would receive the bill for $59,200, and then we would be reimbursed, the city would be reimbursed $30,900 of that from that initial amount. That would leave our total to be $28,300 after the reimbursement. $2,700 after that for annual maintenance fees. I'm sure that figure will change after fiscal year 22, but that's the initial estimate. So those are some of the high points. Basically, it allow us, the only thing we would do on paper anymore would be crime prevention notices, and we didn't think it was worth, at least I didn't for sure, think it was worth the expense to switch that over to electronic, considering how few of those we actually do. I also, an important part of this, I spoke with Christy and Pete Rados, and we have figured in purchasing PDAs for code enforcement to also use this system so that we're all on the same system and everything gets transferred over electronically. So they would be able to use a handheld device, whereas our officers use their in-car computers to utilize the program. I think I pretty much covered all the important portions of it. Does anybody have any questions for me regarding this e-citation software? No? Okay.
Well, I just have one comment.
Sure.
I know times are tough. I hope this one doesn't fall through the cracks, that it stays up there near as close as it can be to the top, because I think this is really important. But that's my opinion.
Take it. All right. Any questions on e-citation?
Moving right along here, PS 2020-16, Strategic National Stockpile.
So this is just really a quick update. Siever and I were talking about the whole COVID-19 and the pandemic going on, and I never thought in my career we would have to plan for a Strategic National Stockpile. If you don't know what that is, it's a mass distribution of medications, equipment, whatever it may be, to the public and the first responders and pretty much anybody in the city of Yorkville that would request to get a vaccine, as an example. Never thought I'd have to do it. However, now with everything going on with COVID-19 and when they do eventually have a vaccine for this, we can see where this is going to be something that's pretty huge. So Ray has been working very hard with our health department, along with the sheriff's office. The county is broken into three regions. You have the Plano region, Yorkville region, Oswego region. Our region obviously covers Yorkville and county residents in that particular area. If you kind of split the county in thirds, we're the middle. And our location would be the Yorkville High School. So Ray is working up a plan right now how we would get the vaccines or equipment or whatever it may be that we would get from IEMA brought over to the facility, and then he's working on plans and maps inside the school. How would we lay out mass distribution of vaccination inside the school with the health department? What security points would we need? What traffic control points would we need? How many staffing members would we have to have? You know, if you put out a vaccine today, I'm sure you can imagine the tens of thousands of people that would be coming to that spot saying they want it now. And so what we're trying to do is plan ahead so that when this does happen, we're able to have enough parking spaces. We're able to have, you know, line management. We're able to have multiple points with the health department to for the injection of the vaccine. We're able to provide security and have security points. When we run out of vaccine at the high school, where are we storing the extra and where all that is kept? So this plan is very detailed. It includes staffing plans for not only the event itself, but we still have to provide police service to the rest of the city. So it's a pretty big undertaking, a pretty large endeavor, and so Ray is looking to probably or hopefully have that completed by the end of either this month or early next month. A lot of that's going to depend on how cooperative the sheriff's office is with how busy they are. So, any questions on the SNS plan?
Hearing none, is there any old business? None, at least not on the list. Any additional business?
Do you want to talk about what we're doing? Martin, do you want to talk about what we're doing for COVID-19?
Yeah, go ahead.
So Seaver asked me to talk about what our police department is doing to make sure that our staff is safe, to make sure how we're dealing with certain things within the organization. When, you know, obviously, as much as I would love to work from home, I envy you guys, Aaron and Bart, I envy you and Carrie, but unfortunately, we can't. So what are we doing as far as how are we dealing with the public and so on and so forth? So Seaver had some good questions we talked about the other day. We have a total of about 10 or 11 special orders. Those special orders cover how are we going to handle traffic stops and calls for service. If we have an employee that is sick or not feeling well, we take temperatures of everybody when they come in the morning or when they start their shift at night and when they go home. We track probably 5 or 6 different medical questions that they have to answer every single day when they come into work on top of their temperature to make sure that they're not coming down with something. We've worked on a plan that if we do get hit with this virus inside our PD, how are we still going to provide police service to our public? We've separated investigations. So we have investigator on days and investigator on nights. We've separated our command staff and how we report to work. Our roll calls are, we no longer have roll calls downstairs with everyone. We've actually moved all of our equipment upstairs into the garage, which makes it so much easier for them. There's no longer guys carrying heavy bags down these big stairway where they can fall and hurt themselves. So we've tried to limit that interaction internally. One of the nice things about Kendall County is we have very good relationships with our other police and fire agencies. So we talk on a weekly basis, 2 times a week for police, 1 time a week for police and fire, and then obviously all of our chiefs talk with how we're doing certain things, and we are all pretty much doing the same things throughout Kendall County, and working with our health department and where we get the information, we have positive tests, how we share that with staff to make sure our staff is safe when they go to calls for service. So there's this whole thing has been it has been a very large undertaking, as you guys all know, and trying to make sure that we're safe, and that's our goal, making sure our staff is safe. So specific questions for me?
Well, I'm going to make a comment and just, you know, you guys, your department puts their lives on the line every day under normal circumstances. And now they're dealing with something that's just totally new and probably just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than things you normally face. And I, for one, just want to express my appreciation to the department and all that you guys do and
thank you.
Are doing in relation to this pandemic. So
thank you.
That's my comments.
Thanks.
I got to say that we have a... I have not, and Ray and Bear are here, and obviously they'll speak up. This city council has done such a tremendous job hiring people. We have not had one officer complain. They come into work. The only thing they're complaining about is they're bored and they want to get out and stop cars and stop speeders and things like that. And that's pretty awesome when you have that. They're not complaining and worried about getting it. They know we take care of them, or we're trying to, and they've done everything they can do. So it's a testament to our staff. So thank you. So
anyone, anything else?
I have a question.
Okay.
Have you gotten any complaints about people congregating and not, you know, on those things like parties or, you know, more than 10 people?
Yes. So we seem to get complaints every day about, you know, social distancing violations. We don't get a ton about numbers of people, but we get a few of those calls. A majority of our calls seem to be people not wearing masks. So we have not had anybody get belligerent with us yet. We have, for the most part, everybody's really following the governor's orders. We were in the store the other day, and I only saw one person in Target without a mask. And so everybody else, I think, is really kind of falling in line, and they get it. But we have talked with our staff on how we're going to enforce it if somebody does have issues. And we are going to do everything we can to work with them and talk with them. But we will not make an arrest without first talking to Kathy or Eric Weiss, the state's attorney's office. So yeah. So far it's been really, really good. Yeah, it's been good. I mean, we're fortunate.
Let's keep open for that then.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you.
I guess we'll do a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
In favor.
Hi.
Good night.